Well, thanks everyone for coming this morning. My name is Melanie Gipp, as Scott mentioned, and I'm an MD candidate at Stanford University. And today I'll be discussing my service and educational experiences during the devastating earthquake last year in Peru. So the title of my talk is The Intersection of Service and Medical Education, Medical Student Involvement in International Disaster Relief After the Peruvian Earthquake in 2007. The other authors that were involved in this project are Marie Wang and Cyril Shaw, also Fogarty scholars from last year, as well as David Blazes, who is a Navy physician at NAMRID in Lima. I have no financial disclosures for this presentation. So on August 15th of 2007, the Department of ICA in Peru was devastated by a magnitude 8.0 earthquake. The epicenter, as you can see, was approximately 25 miles off of the coast of Peru near a city called Chincha. And the provinces in the Department of ICA that were most devastated by the earthquake were Chincha, Pisco, and ICA. And they suffered 98% of the total deaths and required 90% of the total emergency service healthcare visits during the month following the disaster. As of the day after the earthquake on August 16th, the death toll had reached 519 people, and the local and regional health services saw over 100,000 visits during the next month. The largest regional hospital in the city of Ica, as well as the smaller city hospital in Pisco, were almost completely destroyed. And consequently, by September 7th, that next month, over 1,200 people had been evacuated to Lima for further care. And many of the already under-equipped health posts and small clinics were damaged or completely destroyed. So at the time of the earthquake, we had just arrived in Lima. We'd been there for about 5 days, and there was a group of us who stood all together for about 3 minutes while the shaking was going on and kind of wondering what this year would bring for us. After the earthquake, after the shaking stopped, we realized that there really hadn't been that much damage right near us, particularly in Lima, but moments later learned of the devastation that had gone on south of Lima. So at the time, as I mentioned, Cyril Shaw, Marie Wang, and I were just starting our clinical international research program and were sponsored by the University of Washington site, and Joe Zunt being the University of Washington mentor, and Dr. Sylvia Montano being the on-site mentor there in Lima. One of the organizations that we were strongly associated with and involved with for research purposes was the Naval Medical Research Center Detachment in Lima, Peru. The officer in charge at the time was John W. Sanders. So at that time, we hadn't started our research projects yet and really wanted to get involved in the relief effort as it was happening, but didn't really have a way to get there safely or a way to significantly contribute in a meaningful way to the efforts that were going on. So about 9 days after the disaster, while we were in a research meeting at NAMRID, the commander, John Sanders, came in and said, you know, we could really use your help if you guys would like to go down and assist in the relief effort. At the time, NAMRID had been sending teams of physicians to, here's one of the teams, every 7 days to assist with the Ministry of Health in their efforts in ICA. They would send two U.S. Navy physicians as well as two Peruvian physicians and laboratory support. If you can see on the top picture is Dr. Blazes on the far right, and then Dr. Hugo Razuri on the left, and then the three students. And in the bottom picture is the second team that we overlapped with during our stay there, which includes Dr. Giselle Soto. And then you can see Cyril, Marie, and myself, Dr. Eric Hall, Dr. David Bensel, and Moises Waman as well. So here's just a few pictures of the disaster in Pisco. We spent most of our time in the city of Pisco or around Pisco. You can see a dwelling there that's been completely destroyed. And on the upper right-hand corner, that's actually the Pisco Hospital. And they're in the process of destroying it at that point because it was completely unusable. And then the bottom two pictures show damage within Pisco, a building tipped on its side, and then another home that has been completely demolished. So what did we do down there? We're medical students. We're not completely trained to take on the responsibility of caring for patients after a disaster and making those type of decisions. And I think part of the uniqueness of this experience is that we actually had a significant role to play, something that we could really do. And a majority of our responsibilities involved Spanish and English interpreting for the U.S. Air Force MedReady Field Clinic physicians that were already in country when the disaster happened, and they rerouted their efforts to the disaster area in order to help out. Another area of service that we performed was helping with public health conditions surveillance within the internally displaced persons camps. And the third area was helping with the clinical data collection and tabulation for the Ministry of Health in Peru in the field sites that we were at. So here's an example of what we actually did in the field, the field clinics and the IDP camps. And you'll see that there were dental services and as well as kind of internal medicine services just set up impromptu. So we provided pediatric, adult, obstetric, gynecological, dental, and ophthalmologic care. We had a pharmacy that was set up, and it was made of tables pushed together with basic antibiotics and pain relief. And then actually one of the things that left a big impression on me is we were followed around by a set of armed guards in order to ensure the safety of the personnel but also the safety of the supplies, given the instability of the situation and the many people that were left without basic supplies. Anyone who came into the area had to be very careful not to be overrun by people in panic. So, as I already mentioned, the MedReady clinic teams were composed of internists, pediatricians, dentists, optometrists. We set up one clinic a day, which equaled to 10 clinics, and saw over 3,000 patients. So, list of the complaints that we saw. Majority of the visits were medical visits, 4% were dental visits, and 10% were optometry visits. You can see that the chief complaints primarily were associated with things that could be attributed to exposure. Upper respiratory infections, being outside, living in tight quarters in tents, and then chronic injury or pain, which people were suffering from trying to move the rubble and get out from underneath the, all of the adobe blocks. And then dermatitis and eczema was actually pretty common because of the sun exposure and the conditions. And then other, in a smaller degree, we had only 3% of acute diarrhea, which actually was a big concern going in that we would end up being in an outbreak situation, and we didn't run into that, thankfully. Here's just a few more pictures of the services done by the MedReady physicians. On the far right, you see the pharmacy setting up and organizing the drugs. And then on the bottom left-hand side, you see a lineup of patients waiting to be seen in the morning. So as far as the surveillance aspect of what we did, the enamored physicians there were working closely with the Ministry of Health and doing primarily the work of the surveillance. We went out to the different IDP camps and interviewed self-designated or nominated community leaders within the IDP camps to learn more about the situation there. We gathered information on the proximate population, the current sources for food, and how they were distributing food. A lot of the communities use something called an olla común, or a common pot, and they would cook for everyone. Whether or not there was clean water, sanitary water, if they had been brought latrines or if they had designated an area for latrines, and how they were disposing their garbage. At that point, also, we were collecting swabs from diarrhea samples at the field site clinics and bringing them back to be analyzed in the field lab that NAMRED had set up. So here are some pictures of surveillance and data work. In the upper left-hand corner is actually kind of a nice story. We were going through one of the IDP camps and heard that there were some triplets that were suffering from acute diarrhea. They were severely dehydrated when we got there, and you know, we were able to help the family with oral rehydration and make sure that the mom was getting enough food and water in order to provide the breast milk that they needed. And then we took samples and found out, you know, how to treat them, and came back, and they were actually doing quite a bit better. So it's kind of a nice little success story. And then you can see in the upper right is interpreting and working with the physicians, and then in the bottom left is us tabulating all of the data at the end of the day. And the bottom right is just a picture of a beautiful baby coming for treatment. So the Ministry of Health in Peru had organized what they called the Situation Room. And it was an area that at first was in the Pisco Hospital, which was falling apart around us, and then was moved to a school that was more structurally sound later on. And what it amounted to were nightly debriefing meetings. And the NGO organizations that had come from around the world to do work at the earthquake site would come and report on the work that they had done, and they would address priorities for the next day's work. And it was at that point that we also would report the cases of what we'd seen, whether or not we were concerned for any outbreaks, and how to allocate resources for the following day. So these are some pictures of how the Situation Room was set up. We had maps that showed, particularly on the bottom left, you can see where the IDP camps were located, and then we had borders around where they had done vector control, what the needs were for latrines and water supplies. It was pretty well organized and a very interesting experience to be able to assess what was going on in the entire region just by coming into one main room. Not quite as interesting as the magic map in the CNN newsroom, but you know, this was kind of the best that we could do. So what were the main lessons that we learned through this experience? So, you know, of course, issues of IDP camp sanitation, structure, and development, both spontaneous and planned. We saw some camps that had been set up with a lot of forethought and planning, you know, within hours, and had a very nicely structured camp, and then others that were just kind of thrown together and people setting up tents outside of their homes and without any organization for food and water distribution. We were able to participate in and learn about epidemiological surveillance in post-disaster settings, which as a being able to do that firsthand and to truly see what it's like is a very different thing than sitting down and reading the SPHERE guidelines or talking about it over coffee amongst your friends. We were able to witness the strengths and the limitations of mobile field clinics. I feel that they really did do a lot of good work, but many of the issues we were seeing were primary care issues. So it was not well equipped for that and was frustrating, I think, for both the patients and for the physicians. And then most importantly, because we were there to do medical interpreting, we were able to really contribute it in a meaningful way, which I think is a rare experience as a medical student at our point in training. So just a couple pictures. These are examples of how the clinics were set up and different water sources and latrines and people getting organized. So one of the things I wanted to bring up is that this was an example of service learning, and that you know, we combined the principles of responding to those with defined needs, providing training and support for students, and undertaking a meaningful action with the opportunity for reflection and evaluation with mentorship. This is a picture of Cyril and Marie. The conditions were extremely dusty, and we had to walk around with masks on. And you can see that in the bottom right-hand corner that people are already setting up their businesses within the IDP camp and adjusting within days of the disaster. So how can we best address this in the future? You know, the structure of this opportunity was really critical to success. We were supported and closely supervised by experienced physicians who provided with instruction as well as nightly reading materials And we were able to learn about IDP camp sanitation, structure and development. So those are all good things to see firsthand. One of the issues, though, is that medical student involvement in disaster relief has the potential to be very problematic and even dangerous. Currently, there's very little or no training included in core medical education within the United States, and our medical students would be unprepared to face serious injuries and triage decisions that would be necessary during a large-scale disaster without close supervision of trained physicians. Also, you know, disaster by definition creates instability and a potentially dangerous environment. With scarce resources and the breakdown of law enforcement, it can lead to social instability and violence. And it's important that, you know, safety during travel while in the disaster zone be very well planned. NAMRA did a great job of this. They made the team's safety and well-being a priority, and we were housed in a secure location and provided the opportunity in the evening to debrief and talk with each other in order to cope with the emotional impact of the experience. So, you know, what should we do to plan for this in the future? I think I've demonstrated that medical student participation in disaster relief can be an enriching experience if structured well. The NAMRID's physicians, while supporting the Ministry of Health in ICA after the August 2007 earthquake, provided us with the opportunity to contribute to a relief effort as well as learn firsthand about disaster relief management. This type of service learning would be beneficial in addition to medical student curriculum. However, it's really impossible to plan ahead and schedule a disaster for every graduating class of medical school. So I think probably the best thing is to allow the flexibility that we were afforded to take the time when a situation arrives to go and help and to learn, so that you can respond to the defined needs of both our local and our global communities. So I thought this was a nice picture. For those of you who don't read Spanish, it says Pisco, there's only one. And I felt that there was a lot of unity within the community during the disaster and afterwards. And just checking up on how things have progressed in the last year. So on the anniversary of the earthquake, there actually were large-scale protests within Lima as well as the Department of ICA. There are hundreds of people that continue to live in tents without sanitary conditions. Initially, there were over 400,000 people who were left homeless after the earthquake, and really they haven't done a lot to improve that. The Ministry of Housing admits that reconstruction work has advanced only 10 to 15% in some of the regions. However, on the upside, they have made an investment to rebuild the three hospitals, both in ICA, Pisco, as well as in the city of Chincha. So we'll hope that the next year will show more advances. So these are just the references from the articles I mentioned. And the lovely Peruvian flag. So, thank you.
Thank you, Melanie. Our next presenter is Marlene Panton. She's going to be presenting on HIV risk patterns among high school girls in Trinidad and Tobago.